Welcome to Witch Hunt, where we unravel the complex global history of witch trials. I'm Josh Hutchinson.
And I'm Sarah Jack. Today, we are excited to bring you a special discussion from Dr. Katie Ledain.
Dr. Ledain takes us through the Newcastle Witch Hunt.
Welcome, Dr. Katie Ledain. Could you please introduce yourself and share with the listeners your background, expertise, and professional journey?
I'm Katie Ledain. I recently graduated with my doctorate in December of last year in the history and heritage of witch hunting in the northeast of England. Witch persecution, I think, is in the title. I've been at Northumbria for all three of my degrees and was fortunate enough to get scholarships for both postgraduate degrees. And I guess in the more heritage side of my studies and my experience, I started an internship while I was awaiting the start of my PhD that showed me how heavily influenced by industrial heritage and the Northeast as a center for working class communities and scientific innovation had really eclipsed a lot of the other historical events in Newcastle, including the witch trials, because the first time I'd heard of the Newcastle witch trials was through a local newspaper article that was from 2008, but had been republished in around 2016 or so. And it was a very brief article that did send me rolling my eyes a little bit, because the article was about the bones of those convicted of witchcraft being accidentally excavated. And the article described some of the archaeologists or workmen there getting a rash from the bones and describing it as a curse. I found that obviously quite problematic coverage. So I went in search for more to find out more about the Newcastle witches and then to understand how such a large absence and sense of obscurity had developed, especially in comparison with the Pendle witches that are much more famous in cultural memory. And I kind of had the idea and the curiosity and then found an opportunity that would fit to allow me to explore it for so long and write about it. And I think Newcastle has been especially impacted by what I term in my thesis, but I don't think I coined the term, witch kitsch, in the intervening centuries almost between the trials and their resurgence. Strangely, post 2008, 2008 seems to be a watershed moment for the afterlife of the Newcastle witches. There has been mounds and mounds of witchcraft media that has been drawn upon to a greater extent than the few sources we have of the Newcastle witches.
Why do you think that is? Since 2008, why has that changed?
2008 was the year of the article about the bones. And it was during renovation work of St. Andrew's Churchyard that what may have been the bones of the convicted were unearthed. But that was also the year that Walking with Witches, which is a children's novel by Lynn Huggins Cooper, based on the Newcastle witches, was released. And then when you go slightly further back, I have family history journals that do include excerpts from the burial register with the title, Was Your Ancestress a Witch? Then we get small articles in magazines in the 1970s and things like that. But I think post sort of 2008 is the time where you see the solidification of the Northeast as a post-industrial region. And there's been a greater exploration of parts of the region's history beyond heavy industry. And it's enabled people to tap into wider witch kitsch with the regional example. That was already quite a mouthful, but there is like an 80,000 word explanation that starts literally with the witch trials. And then you see a snowballing effect of obscurity and then a kind of redevelopment of interest. I've not been able to pin down why specifically 2008, but you can tie it into wider witch literature, occult revivals, interest in the supernatural.
Now, one way that you've worked on getting more recognition is through workshops you conducted. What can you tell us about those?
I wrote a bespoke workshop at the time for a primary school in the west end of Newcastle called Bridgewater. And the workshop is called Familiars and Fear. And it was written because the children in year six, so that's around 11 years old, were reading Walking with Witches for their literacy class. And the novel touches on a lot of locations in Newcastle, like Newcastle Castle and the Lytton Phil, which is the Literary and Philosophical Society. And the teachers wanted to have a school trip to actually visit these locations. And luckily at the time I was at placement at Newcastle Castle as part of my PhD studies. So I was able to write the workshop that tied in with what they're reading at school, but also the wider witchcraft history in the region. And 11 years old is quite young to explain some of these issues. So it requires a bit of simplification and talking about suspicion and rumor and issues like that, but also bringing in issues of gender and class.
The Prickers and the Finders were a strong part of the Newcastle witch trial history.
Yes. So how the witch trials originated in Newcastle was through a petition that was submitted in March of 1649 for a witch finder to be invited to the town. And unfortunately, the petition doesn't survive. But we get the sense that the witch finder was chosen by name. He was a Scottish professional witch pricker. And unfortunately, we don't know his name today. But he had a reputation that crossed the border into Newcastle. And when he arrived into the town, 30 people, which would have been around 1% of the town's population, were brought forward to be tried by him. And he boasted that he could tell if someone was a witch by their looks alone. But his method in court as a sort of preliminary trial method was pricking with a bodkin, which was a long medicinal pin. And he would prick the devil's marks that he found on the accused. And particularly in English witch hunting, this was a protuberance like a mole or an extra nipple or a skin tag or something like that, that was understood to be the teat at which the familiar spirit would feed. And out of the 30 people, the witch finder found 15 guilty and were passed on to trial, and then they were convicted at the assizes.
Were there also socio-political impacts in the Northeast that contributed to the witchcraft persecutions?
The 17th century in Newcastle was a very turbulent period. You've got various sieges by the Scottish. There's a plague outbreak that was proportionally more devastating than London's 1666 plague. There were pirates at the ports in Newcastle in 1649 to 1650. Harvest crises. Just decades of political upheaval. And whilst, because we don't have the surviving material of the accusations of the individuals, you can definitely see this escalation over the time period, and the fact that witch trial accusations and a reputation for witchcraft took sometimes decades to develop, you can really see, again, like this gradual increase that reached a fever pitch in 1649.
How many executions occurred?
So there were 14 from the Newcastle witch trials, at 13 women and one man. And then Jane Martin was the witch who was accused in Northumberland and convicted alongside the Newcastle witches. But also on the same day, 9 moss troopers were executed. Moss troopers are a local name for cattle rustlers and border thieves. They would essentially use the difference in legislation and jurisdiction to hop across the border whenever they'd committed a crime. The large number of executions taking place on the same day would have been a huge spectacle for people in the region and reinforced the idea of the maintenance of law and order and show some stability in a bizarre way during this period. The number of executions was so large that a special gallows was built. We have record of the construction of an extra large gallows. And this was what made it more surprising to me that the Newcastle witches had been so little known for so long, was that their hanging was the largest hanging for witchcraft in English history. So it, at the start of my studies, it seemed even more strange that the Newcastle witch trials had faded into obscurity.
What can you tell us about the memorial effort?
We're in the early stages at the moment. It's a project at the moment between myself, the learning team at Newcastle Castle, and Newcastle's Council, the Heritage and Conservation Department. We're working on contacting people that we think would be interested, stakeholders, organisations that I've worked with before. And as part of that, I'm quite keen to reach out to other heritage sites in the UK and elsewhere that have witchcraft memorials and to discuss the stories of how they came about there and really learn from how other sites have engaged with their witch hunting past. Not just to, as I was in my thesis, to look at why Newcastle perhaps hasn't yet, but to turn that into an action. We'll look at involving local artists. We've got Bridgewater Primary, the school that I mentioned earlier, involved as well. They did a writing exercise for one of their classes to write a letter requesting a memorial to their local MP. So we are trying to build a communal engagement rather than a sort of top-down memorial that someone will read about in the newspaper, like I did the bone discovery. Mm. And we do fortunately have some small glimpses of what the Newcastle witches were like as people. So Matthew Bulmer, the only male defendant, we know that he was a smith of some form. And he appears in the quarter session records in the years leading up to the Newcastle witch trials in petty disputes with his neighbours. We don't have much detail about what they were about because the clerk didn't seem too interested by it, so he didn't write much down, unfortunately. Men implicated in English witch trials are related to or married to female defendants. But we can't find that connection there with Matthew. And we also know a little bit more about Margaret Brown. And in the only account that we do have in depth on the Newcastle witch trials and the execution, again, we can't really verify this, but Margaret Brown is said to have asked for a sign from God for her innocence as she was about to drop and her blood sprayed across the crowd to the amazement of onlookers. And often when I do public engagement work, I try to explain that amazement meant something different in the 17th century than it does today. But Margaret Brown has a further connection in that one of the witnesses that gave their testimony to support this account of the witch hunt was her friend, Eleanor Loomsdale. And Eleanor spent a year in jail for trying to deter people from giving evidence against Margaret and the co-accused. So we can see evidence of opposition to the witch hunting at the time. And Eleanor getting in contact with the writer of the account years later to give her version of events. So the names of those executed in Newcastle on the 21st of August of 1650 were Isabel Brown, Margaret Madison, Anne Watson, Eleanor Henderson, Elizabeth Dobson, Matthew Bulmer or Bonner, Elizabeth Anderson, Jane Hunter, Jane Coupling, Margaret Brown, Margaret Moffat, Catherine Welsh, alias Coulter, Alice Hume, and Mary Pooks.
Thank you for listening to Witch Hunt. Have a great today and a beautiful tomorrow.